From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
The tour is going to gross about $4.4 million.
Really? So you're making a living?
I'm making a living, but I've also had to spend hundreds of thousands myself.
When comedian Kathy Griffin posed for a photo holding what appeared to be the bloody head of Donald Trump, she became a pariah overnight. So she did the only thing she could do, turned her story into an act, and took it around the world. We spoke to Griffin last October, before she performed her act right here in Santa Monica. That performance was taped and turned into a comedy special that just premiered at South by Southwest. Today we revisit that conversation with Griffin, who despite the well-received festival debut, still doesn't have a distributor for her film. But first on the news banter, Charlotte's Web. Stay tuned, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my partner, but not my private equity partner in banter, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter in New York for the National Magazine Awards. We're nominated, The Hollywood Reporter. So hello, Matt.
Hi there. Thank you.
So speaking of private equity, we're going to do some strained segues here, but we're going to make it work. I am talking about this because Hollywood, like the country, maybe even beyond the country, is electrified by this college admission scandal. And everybody knows the celebrities who got caught up in this thing, and the stories are beyond and off the hook and crazy. But there's somebody behind the scenes who's a player in Hollywood, Bill McGlashan. He is a private equity guy. He's with the firm TPG. TPG happens to be a majority owner of CAA. He is a doer of good works. You know, he has the Rise Fund. He tries to invest in socially conscious causes. But in an exercise of how people of privilege sometimes just think that they should be able to do things that others cannot, he is caught up in this scandal for trying to put in the fix for his kids.
Yeah, and the implication for the business is pretty interesting because not only is he very involved in the CAA investment, he's also on the board of directors of STX Entertainment, the studio that was started by Bob Simons that releases film and TV. And he was actually kicked off the board pending the resolution of what is going on right now, and TPG has suspended him. So, you know, that's a pretty big name in Hollywood investment circles, just kind of, you know, wiped clean because of this scandal.
Yeah. And again, it's that dual identity. I publicly and maybe sincerely want to do good, but I want to do something else for me. And that will bring me to Kevin Sugihara. As we tape, Kevin Sugihara is on the job, but Warner Media is investigating. We reported his involvement with a young actress, Charlotte Kirk, in 2013-14 and his subsequent efforts and her demands to help her get roles and his efforts to assist. And ultimately that led to Brett Ratner being asked to manage her, I would say, is the way to put it. And this is a question now, and we may be taping a little update to this. The resolution about whether he remains on the job is still unknown, but certainly the betting in Hollywood and among professionals who deal with corporate governance issues, the betting is heavily that Kevin Sugihara can't keep the job. And this is a kind of thing where you say it's an illustration in part of how guys get those jobs, and not only how he felt entitled to do whatever, he's married, he has a very high-level job at a public company, but as we reported subsequently, there were more efforts to help Charlotte Kirk get work once it was too hot, basically, to try to put her at Warner movies. She was in two, How to Be Single and Ocean's 8. And this was moved over to Millennium Films, Avi Lerner's company. And as we reported, there was like a cabal of high-level people who were trying to help this very unknown actress get roles, maybe to help Kevin Sugihara, Old Boy Network, or maybe to save themselves.
Yeah, and it came to a head, according to your reporting, with this film Hellboy, the reboot of the Hellboy franchise, which is actually coming out in April. And there was an effort by Avi Lerner and potentially others to get Charlotte Kirk cast in that movie. And the film's producer, Lawrence Gordon, really resisted it and did not want to cast her to the point where he, you know, is said to have kind of drawn a line in the sand. And the filmmaker of that movie, Neil Marshall, disagreed and has since gone into business with Charlotte Kirk. He kind of dropped what he was doing and is now developing projects with her separately. It's just an odd series of events and showcases how, you know, if you have friends in the right places, people will make efforts for you to try to help your career along.
Well, and Neil Marshall actually is in a relationship now with Charlotte Kirk. So that has been a striking thing to people who knew him because he was a rising director. He had done Westworld and Game of Thrones and had this Hellboy as his highest profile project. And he walked away from his longtime agent and partner and projects that were in the pipeline. And, you know, his contention is she's talented and he's thrilled to be working with her. But right now he has, as far as we know, no backing for this film, no distributor for these horror movies that they want to make together. They've been pitched around a lot. It just seems inexplicable to a lot of people. But what's striking to me, again, is just the effort that was made to silence her as she demanded help over and over again. I have said many times, Matt, that if only she could act well, apparently, which was the belief of Lawrence Gordon and the producers of another movie that with Liev Schreiber, Chuck, that they wanted to put her in. And the producers were afraid that Liev Schreiber would go Ray Donovan on them if he was showing up in a scene with someone who was not able to execute according to his standards. So it does show the limits of what can be done, but the effort certainly was made. Meanwhile, more successfully, I will turn to Marvel, Captain Marvel. You know, there were a lot of haters and trolls who were upset because, honestly, I can only say there's something wrong with them, that Brie Larson was going to be the star of a Marvel superhero movie. And, you know, they tried to trash it on Rotten Tomatoes, and Rotten Tomatoes is now trying to fix its system so that can't be done, but just, you know, systematically trashing a movie that hasn't even been released. We've seen this kind of thing before. There's some misogyny out there. It's not news to me or you. And it seems that now Marvel's next project, they did Black Panther. They did a female-fronted movie, and now they're moving to another project with a largely Asian and Asian-American cast. It seems like they are on a path.
Marvel announced that they're making a new hero movie called Shang-Chi, which is an Asian hero. And, you know, it really just shows that the success of Black Panther and now Captain Marvel and to another extent Wonder Woman with DC, it shows that these traditional superhero roles that were traditionally white men, you don't need that anymore to have a massive appeal and massive global success. And in many ways, it makes them unique. It's a selling point. It makes people more interested because it's not like the 45,000 other superhero movies you've already seen.
Yes. And, you know, it makes me wonder, I understand from our engineer here who knows more about this than I do, which is easy, that there is a gay superhero called North Star in the Marvel comics. I wonder if that's where they head next. You know, look, Marvel's a business. Disney's a business. They're about making money. And it makes sense. There are a lot of people who are not white around the world and in the United States of America and avid moviegoers in the group. They could go with somebody who is Latinx, I suppose. That hasn't happened yet. But it feels to me like this is a very smart strategy, but also a strategy that kind of has a meaning and hopefully counterbalancing these people who feel that their mission in life is to try to knock down Captain Marvel or the female Ghostbusters or whatever, because women, you know, that just seems to me like maybe Marvel is pushing against that.
Yeah. And what's interesting about Captain Marvel and good news for Marvel Studios is the movie was fine. It was not, you know, on the level creatively as Black Panther, which ended up getting a Best Picture nomination for the Oscars. And Captain Marvel still did extraordinary business. It did $153 million in the U.S., $450 worldwide opening weekend. These are numbers that have broken records for female-fronted movies. So it shows that the appeal is there and the demand for these kinds of movies are there, even if it's not on the level of a Black Panther creatively.
Yes, so far Marvel can do no wrong. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. An update since we taped this conversation, TPG has terminated Bill McGlashan for cause, and he is also gone from the STX board. Last week, Rachel Ray threw a brunch for Kathy Griffin in Austin, Texas, part of a week in which Griffin unveiled her new movie, A Hell of a Story, at South by Southwest. It was a busy few days for Griffin, who literally walked around with a sandwich board promoting her film.
Hi, I'm Kathy Griffin. Come see my movie tomorrow night.
And who did a Q&A with tech reporter and New York Times contributor Kara Swisher. Griffin was still kind of incredulous that her film was reaching an audience at all.
I spend my days working and producing and writing and pitching. I mean, I have had more meetings, and I have met with every network and streaming service, and I can't believe I'm here. Like, this is the only yes I've gotten in a year and 7 months. Yeah.
You'll recall that Griffin's career in life went much further south than Austin, Texas, after TMZ ran a photo of her posing with what appeared to be the bloody head of Donald Trump. That photo went viral. Griffin was fired from every job and sponsorship she had. She was investigated by the Secret Service and temporarily put on the no-fly list. Griffin fought back with a self-financed world tour, which took her to 15 countries and 23 cities. She's still trying to find a buyer for the film version of her act. Today, we revisit a conversation we had with Griffin last October, when she told us that though her life had changed drastically after the photo, she'd been struggling with her career even before that.
I definitely felt almost like a tangible feeling that since I was about 40, Hollywood has been trying to age me out of the system. So I kind of was already dealing with that part of it. I actually like that Barbara Walters book, Audition. She's not like a fan of mine, but I love her anyway. And I remember in that book, she talks about how when you're a woman of a certain age, I'm 57, about to turn 58, you never stop auditioning, you know?
Right.
And I was kind of used to that part. Like, okay, I've been fired by Bravo. I am kind of dealing with the fact that I was very Bravo associated. So at first, places like HBO would say, and I think actually fairly, right now you're so associated with Bravo. So that was, I thought, all right, let's give it some time. And I then just hit the road harder. So the year before the photo, I did an 80-city tour.
Whew.
Yeah. And that was my sole source of income, as it is now. So one of the reasons the photo was such a big deal is it's not like I was doing stand-up and on a sitcom and doing commercials. Like, I had gotten down to the point where it was stand-up were my only offers, except, of course, when I was the spokesperson for Squatty Potty, which is just an outlier.
Right. But a wonderful invention, right?
I was the queen of poop, Kim. That was the title of the commercial. Okay. Kathy Griffin is, and I wore that crown very proudly.
Proudly, okay.
And so I was always kind of on the hamster wheel. Meaning, like, I wrote another book, and I thought, all right, I really have to jump 10 times higher. So one of the reasons I did the photo was when you're doing a million things and you just don't know what's going to stick, every once in a while, I mean, I'm obviously not an ingenue model anymore, although it's how I started, Kim.
Yes.
I was a teen model.
Swimsuit cover, yeah.
Swimsuit teen model. And then one of the reasons I took that photo, along with a series of other silly, really harmless photos, and then when the photographer, Tyler Shields, who I wish would give me the copyright, but he said he won't. So he sends it to TMZ. And at the time, I didn't know that Harvey Levin was literally talking to President Trump multiple times a week. So my life really did change overnight. The photo itself, honestly, was no deeper than me kind of sort of trying to make a statement. And I mean, I was so naive. I thought this picture could end up in like paper or Vanity Fair or Der Spiegel. I didn't know he was going to send it to freaking TMZ. And then the Oval Office would be coordinating.
The photographer did that?
Yes.
But you didn't have control of it?
No, nothing. I had no publicist at the time. There was no team. Like, when people are like, where's your team? I always go, my team is my boyfriend and my 98-year-old mom. So when I took this photo, I just thought, you know, as you know, there's a real history of comedians, you know, I don't want to say stepping out of my lane, because frankly, it's not really out of a comedian's lane, but to occasionally make a statement or right. Like Jim Carrey is very famously almost daily Instagramming drawings and stuff like that. So,
which are very lacerating, yeah.
Yes. So when I took the photo, the response was so much more than I could have expected. And the only call I got that day, my actual First Amendment attorney, and he still apologizes, was at a funeral and had his phone turned off. So I got a call from Lisa Bloom. And I had met her one time when I was on that show AM Joy with her. And I then got bloomed, which I've talked about openly. I can say this under the First Amendment. It is my humble opinion that she is a terrible attorney and a terrible person.
Well, I have my own grievances with her, which I will refer anybody listening to my pinned tweet. I wrote a Columbia Journalism Review article about her.
So one of the things, honestly, that made my situation a lot worse was when I got bloomed. And she said her husband is a crisis manager. And I kept asking him, like, where'd you go to school? Do you have a degree? And he kept answering, like, in jokes. And in that stage, I was really in a swirl like I had never experienced. Like, I know it sounds obnoxious, but I really was breaking news, like, every 5 minutes. And on the ticker, you know, Kathy Griffin has joined ISIS and will no longer be doing New Year's Eve. So thank you, Jeff Zucker, for that. That helped. You know,
did he literally put that on a ticker?
Oh, yeah. And then Don Jr. tweeted, it's not enough that she's fired from New Year's. We want her banned for life from CNN. And then sure enough, I mean, it's funny now, but like minutes later, I'm breaking news again. CNN bans Kathy Griffin for life. And here's my joke. Really, even my obituary. Now, I know that's a dark joke, but I'm just saying, for God's sake, it's a news organization.
Yes.
So Lisa
that is
Bloom,
a weird policy for a news organization.
Right? Mm-hmm. So Lisa Bloom said, we should have a press conference and change the narrative. And I was such a wreck at the time, and I thought she knew what she was doing. And then when I showed up to the so-called press conference, I didn't know that she didn't vet any of the reporters. They were 95% from the far, far right, the Daily Caller and all those nut jobs. And, you know, there was no security there, and she said there would be. And my actual attorneys were able to show up by that time, and they were told to wait in the hall. And, you know, the press conference was really kind of an infomercial for Lisa Bloom. I'm under a banner that says lisabloom.com. She hands me a coffee mug with water in it that says lisabloom.com. And then she says, right before we start, this is all being live streamed on TMZ.
Oh, God.
I know. So I will say that's the day I probably became global. Because the most embarrassing press conference in show business was seen by a lot of people, and then like cut and reused by like Project Veritas and all these other groups, right-wing groups, and talked about on not only Fox, but the Alex Joneses and all that stuff. So once you're exposed to that world, it is not just career-changing, it's life-changing. So honestly, my whole life did change overnight. Harvey Levin was reporting on my tour cancellations in real time, which they've never done. So I don't blame the theater owners, because if you're, you know, the Count Basie Theater in Red Bank, New Jersey, and normally you're playing like the Blue Man Group or Stomp, you're not used to getting a call from someone with a Russian accent saying that they're going to shoot Kathy Griffin in her, let's just say, feckless area, if you know what I'm saying. So by the next day, I did not have one single day of paid work ahead of me. And then the next day was when I got a call from Alan Isaacman, my First Amendment attorney, saying that the Department of Justice was opening an investigation, I mean, open-ended investigation. And I was then investigated by two federal agencies, the Secret Service and the AUSA. And a lot of people think it was just one agency, but I think the AUSA, Assistant U.S. Attorney's Office, I think they were like ready to like drop the prosecution if the Secret Service could find any cause. So the reason I like doing this tour is I feel it's important to tell audiences sort of the good, the bad, and the ugly. Because
story, yeah.
At the time, the one thing I said in the disastrous press conference was I did keep saying, if this can happen to me, it can happen to you. And now it's happened to John Brennan. So it's been quite a journey.
Critic of Donald Trump and former CIA chief. Yeah. So you get to zero. I mean, you lose sponsorships, you lose New Year's Rockin' Eve or whatever it was called.
Right.
Which one was it? They all blew together in my head.
I know. And the funny thing is, you know,
Anderson Cooper, obviously. CNN.
Yeah, Anderson Cooper tweeted against me and said I was disgusting. And that also, you know, didn't help and was unexpected. I didn't know he was going to do that. And Jake Tapper had already come for me, et cetera. Oh, also, I think you should know, I have a list.
Of?
Oh, I'm bitter. I have a list of every single person who tweeted against me those couple of days.
I'm sure it's a long one.
Oh, I confront them one by one. It's fantastic. It could be my life's work.
The list. So you lost Squatty Potty?
Okay. Can I just say that is why I love doing my show is because like I do tell the audience everything from I actually end the show with the actual interrogation and I take them in the room and you can hear a pin drop and also jaws drop. So
this is the interrogation from the feds.
From the feds, exactly. And, you know, in those rooms, they take you under oath and it's not a situation where if I screw up, Alan Isaacman can say like, oh, I need a moment with my client. So I knew that there was a lot on the line. And also what a lot of people don't know who, you know, troll me every day and go, you're whining and you're old and ugly and that's why you don't have a special. What they were considering charging me with, and this is the part that is historic, is they were considering charging me with conspiracy to assassinate the president of the United States, which carries a life sentence.
Hmm.
So what I do up until that point in the show is I make sure I get in a lot of funny. Like the whole Squatty Potty thing, it's funny. Admit it. Even I'm laughing that I was dropped as the face of poop. I was dropped as the face of poop, Kim. There's no other way to slice it, okay?
Okay.
And honey, I cashed that check so fast, I was thrilled to be the queen of poop. So when you hear breaking news, you've been dumped by Squatty Potty, it's real, my friend.
Coming up after a short break, Kathy Griffin tells us about getting detained at every single airport while traveling for her world tour. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. This week, we're revisiting our conversation with comedian Kathy Griffin. When she sat down with us last fall, she was at the tail end of a world tour, one that started overseas by necessity, as she was very much persona non grata in the U.S. Griffin taped a performance of her Laugh Your Head Off tour, and she's still seeking a buyer for the movie version, Kathy Griffin, A Hell of a Story. The film just premiered at South by Southwest. At the festival, Griffin told tech reporter Kara Swisher that she's still rebuilding brick by brick.
I'm actually going to start a run in L.A. at the Laugh Factory, which is really how I got my first sort of big break. And even though I said I would never do clubs again, I'm going to do, there's 5 Mondays in April, and it's literally just going to be a new hour every week. And the show is called Kathy Griffin, A New Hour Every Week, because if nothing else, I'm prolific. And so maybe that will make the industry people go, oh, she's not like these guy comics that need like two years to come up with 20 minutes.
Fallout from the infamous 2017 photo of Griffin holding a Donald Trump mask covered in ketchup still follows her.
I mean, how many times have you been asked if you're sorry you took the photo?
Probably every interview they ask that at some point. So let me explain the narrow apology. Because so what happened, and I talk about this in the show too, and Rosie O'Donnell, when she called me and she said, this picture has gone wide. And I was like, I know, right? And she's like, no, in a bad way. People think you're an ISIS. I honestly thought she was kidding and hung up. And then she called me back and she said, what if Daniel Pearl's mother saw this? And that's one, you know, having performed in Iraq and Afghanistan and Kuwait and Uzbekistan and Walter Reed, I had a real relationship with the military. And they dumped me too, by the way.
Right.
I didn't.
My joke is,
yeah, I didn't get Dixie chicked. I got Dixie dicked. But anyway, so when I heard those words, I mean, frankly, the statistical numbers of Americans who have been actually affected by an ISIS beheading is infinitesimal. However, how can you not respond to what if Daniel Pearl's mother sees this? So that's why I made the apology video. That made things worse because then my comedian friends got mad at me. It was an odd time because some people just decided to go in and really, really kick me when I was down. Some of them knew, and those are the ones that hurt. And I talk about that in the show because I think everyone knows that feeling of you're at the office party or the relative holiday party, and if there's a dog pile on you for some reason, there's always like that one person you think, oh, that person will have my back. Well, I thought that person would be Anderson Cooper, and I was wrong. So it's taught me many, many lessons. And then ultimately, it taught me that I had to change my entire business model.
And tell me about that.
This is what I've actually had so much fun doing since the not fun part. First of all, during my investigation, which took 2 months, I was on the no-fly list.
Oh, so that's, you couldn't go places and
correct.
Do work. Yeah,
that's also unprecedented. There's never been, well, there wasn't a no-fly list before 9/11, but in our history, there's never been a case where a sitting president personally uses his own power, the Oval Office, obviously the First Family. Don Jr. came after me again twice this week. So the first question I had for my agent was, are there countries where you know out the gate that they pretty much hate Trump? And 2 weeks later, I had 15 countries and 23 cities, and I was detained at every airport. And I talk about that in the show as well because it's scary. And I also want people to know they can do that. You know, sometimes you read something online or Facebook or you think, oh, well, I hear there's some new ruling where they can't do that. They can detain you. LAX did it. They can take your device. That's another kind of misnomer that's going around. They can take your phone or SIM card. There's now something on my passport. And so now I was at the time when I did my overseas tour on the Interpol list. So I was detained at every single airport. Then when I was able to finally work in my country of origin, I just got a lot of resistance from my own representatives that I had made. You know, I mean, I've probably made maybe $75 million over the course of my career. So all the folks that I've been, you know, paying commissions
yes.
to
yeah.
didn't quite know what to do with me. Then I thought, all right, I'm kind of on my own. And I did the overseas tour where out the gate, the feeling was completely different. They all thought the picture was, as Don Jr. would say, a nothing burger. So that was great.
Like, what countries?
I started in Auckland. And also, the nature of my act is really improvisational. So they were having an election there, and they actually elected their first female president. And then I did 5 markets in Australia, and I was able to play the Sydney Opera House.
But outside of English-speaking countries, too?
Yes. I went to Antwerp. I went to Stockholm. I went to all the Nordic countries. I went all over Europe.
Are these small venues?
Singapore. No. One of my requests was, you know, with this kind of material and the kind of blowback that I was getting online, but also I was getting a ton of death threats delivered to my home, and that happens to this day. One of my sort of messages about the show is that these Trumpers, they don't stop, you know, in the way that Jane Fonda will be Hanoi Jane to some people till the day she dies. Mm-hmm. Like, I now have a very clear understanding that that photo will be with me forever. So what I did was, when I was told, we don't think you can sell more than 500 seats in any city in Canada or America, I thought, I can't just play New York. Like, I have to play Carnegie. And yet it didn't mean anything in Hollywood. It still doesn't. Like, I sold out the Sydney Opera House, and yet my representatives here at home were like, and? So I'm still working on, you know, I'm taping my own special with my own money. And my show now is, warning, my show now is 3 hours.
Woo.
Sometimes it's 3.5.
Yeah, like Springsteen up there.
Thank you. I love that analogy. And so I'm doing really, really well on the road. I love doing it. But like I said, I'm about to be 58. I'm going to tape my special here on October 29th. There's a beautiful theater inside Santa Monica College called The Broad. And I am going to put it in a temperature-controlled vault until Hollywood comes to their senses. Because I just feel that because the story is historic and I'm out there telling it for women, people of color, LGBT folks, because what's happening to me, I really, in my heart, believe that Trump and Sessions and those boys, I think everyone knew I'm an easy target. I don't have a studio behind me. I don't have a network behind me. I don't have a movie franchise like Johnny Depp did when he allegedly made a threat. You know, they didn't bring in any of the guys. So I was the only one, and it just went on and on and on and cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal bills. And so one of the things I also want to make sure everyone knows is you can hate that photo as much as you want, but it is absolutely covered by the First Amendment. So the people that, you know, have signs of me at a rally and say, lock her up, I did not commit a crime. And God forbid if you posted that or if somebody's 13-year-old kid put it on Twitter, they shouldn't have to be under a federal investigation for months.
No, and I would just be like assassinated by my employers. But right. Yeah.
The normal way, the new normal.
Right.
So anyway, that what I realized is I had to change my business model to, and I hate to sound Trumpian, but truly appeal to my base, meaning I've probably permanently lost the women that would come see me, let's say, in casinos. And, you know, my show was purely pop culture. But what I love is I have been opened to somewhat of a new audience. My diehard fans, if I can sound like the runner-up on any season of American Idol, my fans have really, I have to say, they have proven that they are the best. The tour is going to gross about $4.4 million.
Really? So you're making a living.
I'm making a living. But I've also had to spend hundreds of thousands myself in doing marketing in addition to the 15% I paid Live Nation and the 10% I paid the agency. So I'm still maybe making a quarter on the dollar if I'm lucky. But I had to invest that money back in for the marketing. And what I love is that I'm now getting like folks that, frankly, maybe they've seen me. I mean, I've been around so long. So part of it is saturation. Like, oh, I like Kathy, but I saw her 5 years ago. So this tour, this is it. Like, I truly don't know what my future is, but I really, really hope someday someone buys either the special or turns it into like a 6-part series with backstage footage and interviews or something.
Comedian Kathy Griffin, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me. I think you're fantastic.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Paul Smith. You can subscribe to The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts at kcrw.com/podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.